Welcome to Women Who Move Nations, a podcast by the Public Transport Association, Australia, New Zealand. Each episode, we interview top female executives from the public transport sector in Australia, New Zealand, and around the world. If you're interested in leadership, workplace gender equality, or building clean, green transport for the future, this is the podcast for you. This season is proudly sponsored by NEC Smart Transport Solutions. Find out more at nec.com.au. Now here's your host, Michelle Batsis.
Hello and welcome to our next episode of Women Who Move Nations. I'm Michelle Batsis, your podcast host. I'm the Executive Director of Future Mobility at the Department of Transport and Planning in Victoria. And today I'm super excited to be interviewing our guest, Michelle Shepherd, who also works in my Department of Transport and Planning in Victoria. She is the Diversity and Inclusion Senior Advisor. She's also known as Mama Mish in her community, which I'm really looking forward to hearing more about today. So, Michelle, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to explore both your personal and professional journey today, to explore the issues around diversity and inclusion that we're facing in the transport and planning sector, not only across Victoria, but in Australia and in reality around the world. So I might just start with, if you could share with our listeners the journey that's led you to your current role as the Senior Advisor for Diversity and Inclusion in the department, and what are your reflections of that journey?
Well, Michelle, look, it has been 12 years since I came out as transgender. So despite my voice that you're hearing, my pronouns are she and her. And whenever I do this work, I always want to take the moment to acknowledge not only the lands which each of us are actually meeting on and pay our respects to the elders that are past, present, and emerging, but it's also important for me to recognize those that have come before me within the wider LGBTIQA+ communities, especially those who are transgender women. Because as a transgender woman doing this work, I wouldn't be able to do this unless I've done what they've done before me. Now, before I came out, I had a life of, you know, a very heteronormative Western suburb in Melbourne, blue collar, working in the IT industry, being a father, being a husband, very much that 2.5 picket fence life that you'd expect. And through a few challenges that were thrown our way, my marriage had dissolved and a few things happened. So I took some time to explore what I was going through and what I was dealing with when it came to my gender identity. And after I came out, I found that I really struggled to find employment. I had taken a small career break, had shifted gears and thought, look, I'll take maybe about a year and, you know, use my makeup artistry course certificate that I had and actually applied it to working in a salon for a while. But just to have something different, because 20 years since a young age of doing the same thing over and over was quite, you know, I don't know, no one's saying boring, but you know, you need new challenges. And I just needed something different. I thought that would be a safe place to shift and explore my journey that I was going on. But unfortunately, that didn't really pan out the way I thought it would. And I went to go back into my industry, but the agencies, the recruiters, the people I've spoken to, constantly shut the door in my face. I was told, look, we can't place women in IT very easily. And being a trans woman, there's no way we can actually place you. There's just no organization that'll hire you. Look, you've been out of the industry for 3 months. You're now going to have to reskill and retool, go back to school. You don't have enough skill. And I was quite shocked by that. 20 years and taking 3 months to go do something differently. I was really taken back by that. They said, whatever you need to do to look after you and your two daughters, at the time they were 7 and 4, to put food on the table, whether it's scrubbing toilets or stocking shelves, you're going to have to go back and start your career over. There's just, again, no one's going to hire you. So it was really was something that just degraded me and just really lowered my confidence in what I was doing. So I became a D&I practitioner by accident by doing a lot of public speaking, consulting with organizations who eventually came my way and had met me through doing radio with Joy FM. And wanted me to help them sort of understand some of the challenges they were facing when it came to trans people, because they felt they could gravitate to me, they could talk to me and have a real honest, open conversation. So through the years, I had worked for a few of our different companies, did a little bit of consulting, but eventually it was meeting through a job as a consultant to come in to do some training with a Level Crossings Removal Project that immediately, as soon as I was done doing the second out of three sessions, they're like, we've got a role we actually think you'd be interested in. threw me the job description and said, we would love to bring you on. And I was like, yes, that'd be amazing. Because I myself, when it came to public transport, found a lot of challenges of being physically attacked, knocked on my back, spat on, called many derogatory things while traveling, having my photos taken, being stalked and followed at train stations. So for me, it was something that really fed into what it was around my employment advocacy and the barriers that I had seen. It really aligned well with my values being here in transport.
Thank you for sharing, Michelle. What an incredible story. I have so many questions to ask you. And I'm just reflecting, just before we started the interview, when we were having a chat, you talked about this concept of this is a brave, not a safe space. And I think that's what you said. And correct me if I'm wrong.
No, definitely. I like the idea of a brave space more than a safe space. I think what happens in most conversations, people are too afraid to ask the questions that they really need to ask or want to ask because they're afraid because they don't know the right languages that need to be used. And so I say to people, look, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs. So let's go ahead and create a brave space where I allow you and me to speak in a way that we both can be just authentic and just be ourselves in this moment. It may be messy. It may not be the right language, but we get what we're talking about. And through that conversation, we can create a safe space to have a common understanding of each other.
Yeah, look, I actually really appreciate that because, and I know I asked you some questions before we started around, you know, how would you like to be referred to? And I think actually by having you say and hearing, you know, this is a brave space, I just want to say thank you because I feel like I needed permission. You know, I think that there's a lot that, you know, I personally feel that I want to understand more. And so I'm just going to ask you the questions. So you talked about coming out as a transgender woman and the challenges that you faced professionally and the perceptions that you had to, I guess, in some ways challenge. And I just want to ask you more, can you share more about that? From hearing you, this is what I'm imagining, right? That you came out and people perceived you as different and different in a way that maybe they don't understand. Maybe it kind of threatens their, you know, constructs that we've, you know, grown up within society around, you know, how people fit in and how people need to be. And how did you face that? Like to actually find that bravery within yourself to be authentic and share your story?
Great question. There's so much. And you often have to filter in your head going, what are the most important things to actually share with this? Because it's actually been quite a colorful decade to go through with all of this. Coming out within Western society and our ideas of what it is to be transgender, the only references we have is what we see on social media, what we see in television or the movies or stories that might come up. But also, there's a lack of engagement or connection to this community as a whole as well. So it creates this misunderstanding and then it creates these stereotype stories that aren't even real, right? And so even coming out myself or dealing with my gender identity issues from a very young age, probably about 4 or 5 is when I first started dealing with a lot of this. And it's a very common story with many others that I've met over the years. But there was no way to have the conversation. There was no education. There was no services. There was nothing. So you try to be what it is that you're told you're supposed to be. And again, you know, look, I can't help it. My voice is the way it is. So obviously the listener who's going to be listening or even yourself, it is quite confusing. And I can't help that my voice is the way that it is. So when I came out, you know, I'm, you know, again, 6'3", I'm broad shouldered. I'm, you know, at the time I had a beard. I was trying to do my best to be society's idea of what it is to be a man, what it is to be, you know, the provider, the carer of my wife and my children, protector. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm still that person as well too. But unfortunately, I guess now, but at that time, it's hard because you can't quite understand what is going on in your mind and your heart because it all feels different than what you're told you're supposed to be. So when I started exploring this, I had my own maybe transphobia or my own issues around what it is to be transgender because the examples I had in front of me were quite scary as well. I didn't want it to be that or look the way that people in society had seen the particular community at the time. And then when I did come out, there were lots of comments and negativity from family and friends. And I lost my mom, not through death, but through just hate and fear. I lost my siblings, though my sister and I have only recently started talking again. My relationship, even though it was broken down became even more fractured and I lost access to my children. So, you know, your own confidence, who you are, you're torn apart, you're broken down, and you have to rebuild yourself in a way. And sometimes many of us don't have the skills or the tools to rebuild ourselves. But also coming out as transgender, you're no longer part of men's spaces, not even say gay spaces as well. Because there's times I go out with my gay friends and we're sitting there having a beer, having dinner, and they're off going to a gay men's space and I can't go because I'm not a man anymore. But also we don't understand the social contracts of women's spaces. So we don't have that time to sit down and talk and engage and understand the language and how certain tones or actions or any of those things. So we're kind of lost and disconnected and isolated in a lot of ways. And so you have to really find your ground and you have to learn to do this overnight to become who you are and finding things. And so everybody else around you has those stereotypes. You're looking at, you know, Norman Bates of Psycho or Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs or, you know, all these other very negative, dark stereotypes at that time. We didn't see any of the positive imagery that we see in television movies, which is why it's so important we see representation in television and movies because those are our references. I mean, I remember during COVID, I was going back and watching shows that I hadn't really finished, things like, you know, How I Met Your Mother. Such a cheesy, silly show, right? And probably not the best of television shows, but it was just an easy watch because it was stupid, right? But as I was watching it in every other episode, here was Barney going to Ted every time Ted had a girlfriend. Oh, did she used to be a man? I bet she used to be a man. And I'm going, wow, like, how is this the punchline and the joke every time? Because it's such a degrading thing, according to society and to men and as well. So as I'm going out to go and find jobs and trying to rebuild my career, the people that I'm engaging with as well are watching these shows and they have their own stereotypes and representations. And so you're sitting before them, in front of them in this moment, and then they have those unconscious biases that become maybe even conscious biases because they don't understand you or how to make the connection of how to fit you into their culture. And especially when it comes to toilets or just engaging in general. So there's fear and on both sides. And you know, I had to go and find a way to rebuild myself and rebuild my confidence and understand maybe society in a different way in order to navigate and move myself to this point.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing. Michelle, you really inspired me. Like, you've inspired me so much. You know, I think many of us feel actually afraid to be our authentic selves, particularly when it comes to our professional career. You know, you've got me reflecting on something that, you know, not many people know this about me, and only in recent times have I shared it, but I'm neurodivergent and I spent so long of my life thinking I'm so different. And now, you know, I realize actually that it's like a superpower, right? And I've just got to own it. And so I just want to say thank you for sharing, because I have no doubt that you sharing your story is really inspiring our listeners. So I just want to say thank you in this moment.
Thank you, Michelle. I really appreciate that. I mean, I myself recently found out that I'm neurodivergent in a way as well, too. And again, you know, realizing it actually is more of a superpower than not, and not realizing how different you are. But also, I've learned to find the blessings in being trans as well, and being able to have walked two lives within society and having different lenses that I can apply to the work that I do. But also finding a new level of resilience when dealing with some of the things that I'm dealing with. So thank you so much for that. I appreciate it.
So when you were sharing before, you talked about loneliness, and I'd love to dive in a little bit more about that, because I think many people experience some loneliness in the workplace. And I'm just wondering, could you just share maybe a little bit more around the practices that you've put in place around this, but perhaps some thoughts that you have around how people working in public transport can show up for each other? You know, like, how do we combat this in the workplace and ensure a space where people aren't lonely or don't feel lonely, but actually feel a connection?
Great question. I'll actually probably break it down two things. So first off, you know, talking about the loneliness and explaining it maybe a little bit further before I go into how we sort of combat that in the workplace. So when I talk about the loneliness, it's getting on the train every morning and not seeing anybody else around you, and the staring that comes during the morning on the platform or on the train. You know, I would have to say maybe even also being an immigrant myself, you know, even though I speak English and I come from the US, there's a different language and a different humor and a different way that people speak here and connect, that, you know, sometimes just the smallest little quirky things that we do within our own culture and our own group of circle of friends, our own inside jokes that bring us a little bit of comfort, right? So there is a level of maybe faking it till you make it as well within there, right? And so when I came out, I didn't have anybody else to sort of mentor me, help me understand what I was going through, help me understand how I should walk and talk. And so I had to learn and teach myself everything that I do, watching everybody around me, navigating spaces and finding new ways to move. Now, it was interesting, you know, later in life, I of coming out within my trans journey, I had seen all these stats around those who identify as transgender who had suffered from mental health issues and had attempted or considered suicide. And, you know, it was a really troubling stat to really see and read that. But as I went to learn, because I myself am somebody who had experienced suicide ideation within the early days of coming out, and I had to sit down and take some time to really explore and understand that. And what it was again, the whole, I'd lost my mom. You know, my mom told me, you know, what a waste. It's a very colorful way. It's a very dark way of she expressed her feelings and that she had never had me. Right? I lost contact with my siblings, lost contact with most of my other family. I hadn't seen my kids. My kids were away from me. I barely had them when I'm gone from having them every day. You know, my ex-wife looked at me in disdain. So it's just that disconnect. And then you want to prove yourself. You know, in the past, you know, I had always put myself into my work and found myself in my work and had just surrounded myself in the busyness of work. And I didn't have that anymore. So just even going down to get fish and chips from the shop, which I couldn't even afford at the time. I had no employment. When I had my kids, I was, you know, buying discounted 75-cent beef hearts off the shelf that I turned into steak as best I could with 2-minute noodles that I was feeding my children. I could barely put food in the cupboard. So I was at this extreme low point where I actually had planned a last weekend with my daughters. And it was this weekend I had with them that sort of flipped my mind and turned things around for me. And I realized I have so many things that I need to do and I'm not going to give up. And funny enough, I won't talk about necessarily my faith or anything like that. I've got my own unique faith that I have in the universe. But it was interesting that same weekend, I had friends of mine show up with 3 suitcases of food to fill my cupboard. Now, I think I might still have bags of flour that are still sitting there that have traveled with me from place to place that I don't know what I'm going to do with. But at least it was some kindness that came to me out of the blue. But it was, you know, getting out there, you know, 10 coffees in one day, literally I had where I was going out and reconnecting with people. But again, it's that loneliness of not really feeling like you can be your full self. You have to show the best side of everything and you have to protect parts of you that are hurting and most vulnerable. And you can't show that to anyone. And it's heartbreaking. It really puts such weight on your chest, in your heart, pardon me. And to hide so much of that. That's why I've really had this shift where, again, near the beginning of this conversation we had, where I said, I want you to have a brave space with me where we can actually just be ourselves. And I don't have to give you the tap and dance of what you're expecting me to be. I want you to be connected to me and have an authentic conversation. So, you know, even today, there are moments where I might be in a busy room or a women's conference. And again, I'm the only trans person there. Or the only trans woman that I can see. And it's tough, you know, because you know you've got all these eyes. There's no one you can gravitate to. So sometimes you're standing there, no matter how much people might know who I am, you'll stand there and you'll see people staring at you. They don't even give you a quick little smile. They just stare and they'll look away. But when they finally hear you speak on stage and they get a chance to hear you present, or I have disarmed them and I made them feel more comfortable, then people will come up to you and become your friend and actually want to engage with you. And it's funny, like I was at a conference recently, and after I had spoke the day before, the next day, there were like 3 people who came to me from different tables wanting me to be at their table to engage with, which I found interesting because nobody wanted to talk to me the day before. So it has a moments of isolation that you have where you have to put on a certain face, you have to act a certain way, you have to disarm people on a day-to-day basis. And you have to just, in some ways, hide the times you're struggling because again, the stereotypes around someone being transgender and mental health issues and the stats that they're putting in people's faces. I'm not saying that's necessarily in my case, but immediately will have those fears and beliefs about you in that moment. And that's why, you know, when we look at how do we change that in the workplace, which is why one of the things I'm so excited about with the Department of Transport and Planning is how we have a strong diversity and inclusion focus, where we have people with lived experience who are working within this space. Because if you actually work in diversity and inclusion in many other industries or organizations, whether it's private or public, it's usually one person with a lack of diversity within their own background who is actually trying to go and run very tick-boxed programs to do diversity and inclusion and create employment pathways or targets, internships, but it's always with outsourcing with different organizations. But with people with lived experience, we're in there. We can help someone who's affirming their gender or coming out or transitioning as we would know, or someone with disability and doing a casework and adjustments, or someone, you know, who might have an invisible neurodiverse diagnosis that comes through and how we help those make those adjustments in the workplace, or someone who's First Nations. So, you know, that's why, you know, we need to have a different way of looking at how we actually do this work internally in organizations to help onboard and diversify our workforce. Our workforce should represent the people who we're supporting. And for me, though, you know, still on a day-to-day basis, I am, again, the only trans woman I see. And only recently we've brought in an intern in my space who is a young trans female who is working in the team. But again, you know, it also comes down to leadership and mentoring and coaching. I don't have anybody above me who identifies necessarily as myself to help maybe navigate some of the things I'm navigating. And I really look forward to when I can connect with other senior leaders who want to invest in me and help me and coach me and mentor me. But then when I go to then be a mentor and coach to say to what we say is a cis woman. So when we say cis, that means that you identify as the gender you were assigned at birth. How would a cis woman feel if I were to be a mentor or a coach to them as a trans woman? And there's still those negativity or negative feelings about, say, someone like myself helping a younger woman or another woman trying to navigate this space. So it's quite challenging. And we need to start breaking down those things by doing even things like this, podcasts like this, or conversations like this, where we can help people understand more.
PTA ANZ is proud to bring you Season 7 of the Women Who Move Nations Public Transport Podcast in partnership with NEC Australia. With over a century of innovation and a strong commitment to creating a brighter, more inclusive world, NEC is dedicated to gender equality and diverse perspectives, and is amplifying the voices of women leaders in public transport. Struggling to hold on to your drivers? Transform your bus operations with NEC's Turn by Turn, the first bus navigation system built to reduce driver onboarding and training significantly. Head to nec.com.au/STS.
Thank you so much for sharing, Michelle. Wow, that was so powerful. I've got so many questions, and it's such an interesting reflection that you share. I just want to ask you something straight out, right?
So sure.
This podcast is called Women Who Move Nations. I feel really strongly about it. When I started it a few years back, I was over it. I was over just seeing men everywhere in these senior roles and then men, I guess, being profiled because of that. You know, I had the privilege of going to so many conferences and traveling the world. And I don't know if you've heard this concept of a manel, right? Which is like a panel of men. You know, occasionally you'd see a female, a cis woman being the moderator, right? And there'd be a scramble to be like, how do you find women? And so many conversations I've had with event organizers who say, you know, it's just the reality, right? Of, you know, we can't find women. And actually what I've found in the journey that I've been on is that there's plenty of women. You just need to find them. You just need to encourage them. You know, actually, you know, part of this was raising the profile of women, really. But it just gets me thinking, right? You know, I've had feedback over time around, you know, we shouldn't be talking about women in leadership. We need to be more inclusive. It's everyone. It's men, it's women, it's gender diverse. How should we be framing this conversation? You know, I generally want to know, you know, no, and it's not just this podcast. Like, how do we be more inclusive? You know, you were talking about going to women's events and you're the, you know, maybe the only trans person there. You know, what are your reflections on that?
So this is where I lean into two paths that I've walked in life, right? And there's somebody who's walked and lived and worked in a lot of blue collar spaces. So what I'll do is I'll take a step back to, you know, my previous life. And I remember, again, you know, you're trying to hide the parts of yourself that society says is not right and is wrong. You know, not trying to show my femininity or who I am as a person on the inside and trying to mask that by being as much of the man as society says I should be. But I really found it a struggle. I really found the toxicity, the negativity, the men who were aggressive, who just swore, who did some of the worst stuff I'd seen, just in language and body language and attitudes towards each other. It just kind of felt like just the dog eat dog kind of stuff. It was just really, really full on. And so it really did bring me down as a person because I just really didn't feel like I could ever be my full self at work. And, you know, when I tried to express myself, even my own personal life, if I had done painting or oil painting or sketches or had done a makeup artistry course, you know, I remember even the language that came from my wife and even her friends and our circle of friends going, oh, well, what are you? Are you a poof? Are you gay? And I'm like, well, no, I'm not. And it was, again, you know, you don't know who and what you are. You just know this is who you are as a person. But when my wife was running her own business from home, I still had to work and do what stereotypically you do as a man or as a husband. So she was having our children. She was running her business from home. If I'd had the option to take parental leave or paternity leave or whatever, the way that you say most women are able to take, I probably would have taken that option and been there at home to look after my children so she could continue actually building her business from home. She was a makeup artist herself and running, doing lashes and nails and this little salon from home. And it would have been important for me to help do that for her, right? But again, there was really no options at the time that I could take that. And if you did, you would have been like, well, what is it? Your wife's the breadwinner and you're weak. You know, there's this sort of mentality around that. After coming out, I've spoken to so many men over the years who really wanted to sit down and have these sort of these similar conversations that we have, and met men who are like who I was at that time when I was presenting myself as a man. Now, they themselves are not transgender. They may, you know, have probably questioned their own sexuality, whether they were bi and stuff, but they more than likely would have, say, a wife and kids, and they're very happy in their relationship, but they wanted to help out more. But unfortunately, I think with some of the women's spaces, like women's networks, we've created a bigger wedge to push a lot of men out. And even at the women's conference I was at, it was interesting trying to watch this man in this woman's space trying to be more of an ally and more of a be part of the conversation. But you could see that he was reserving himself. But then when he spoke, a lot of the women sort of looked away and looked down and didn't engage with him. And so I think it's a saying somebody said to me that sometimes some of these spaces we do go so far left wing, we become right wing and we become exclusionary as well. And I think when we do a lot of this work, we should be talking about the gender equity or gender equality spaces, or gender equity. And if we allow men to come in, yeah, we may not offer them, say, mentoring sessions or maybe, you know, different tuitions or extra skills or extra whatever to make them up the same level like we're trying to do for women, say, with Women in Transport, some of these other programs. But if we include them in the conversation and have them there working with us, we will find that they will gravitate over to this side and to women's spaces to work with us and support us and be what we need to help change society. And those who are perceived to be those alpha toxic dogs will become a smaller pack over on the side, and we can probably see them a little bit more. But because we create this divide down the aisle, those men don't want to come over because they'll be seen as weak. And we have to develop a better understanding of men and women. Men and women aren't very different from each other. You know, I've seen a lot of it. And there's things in society how where we raise people and talk to people. You know, the studies we know, I was talking recently with the WGA, with the pay gap, you know, studies talk about, hey, men and women's brains aren't that much different from each other. A lot of it comes down to how we are socialized. And we need to be talking more and bringing more people into the conversation. But again, a lot of these spaces we talk about are men versus women. We forget that there are those who are gender diverse, though that the conversations need also talk about women of color, women with disability, women with multi-faith backgrounds, multicultural backgrounds, those who are non-binary. There are people who are non-binary who have have lived experience of living socially as a woman in society, have been impacted by society's pressures and stereotyping and the way we raise women as well, that has impacted how they engage with society and interact, but they don't themselves see themselves or navigating or being part of women's spaces, or even as a woman themselves, they feel quite different. And I've met so many people who I can say, yeah, I can definitely understand and see why someone would be identified as non-binary. But we should still open those spaces because they have some lived experience they can share with us. There's so much wisdom still in there. There's something, things they went through. I think there's a space for women or moms or multicultural women to still come together. Those little smaller fractured groups that need to come together. But as a whole with gender equity spaces, there should be a space of thought and of conversation and how we get away from women versus women or women versus men, and how we work together around gender equity as a whole within our industries.
Yeah, wow. There's a lot there that I think our listeners will be really thinking about as you shared. You talked about this concept of allies. And I think, you know, I've heard from colleagues like over the years, say male colleagues say, you know, I want to understand, I want to know more. What advice would you have for individuals who want to be allies and they want to support diversity and inclusion in the workplace, but maybe they do also have, you know, that fear around, you know, what's safe, how do they be brave, you know, how do they have those conversations and how do they support women?
Oh, look, I'd have to say myself, again, going back and using those two lenses. So going back on how I was living and navigating life, I was sort of looking internally, trying to hide my stuff inside, trying to focus on my own little bubble, looking after my family, protecting my family, that the issues that were around me weren't necessarily as important as what I was doing focusing on my family. So a lot of the stuff that I deal with and talk about around the inclusion stuff or understanding the challenges that are around me, I probably wasn't as aware of those things around me, which is very unfortunate. But, you know, I'm working to do my best to be part of the change now. But when I came out, I was very aware of a lot of those things. But I think the biggest challenge we have, Michelle, is there are so many people who have walls up and chips on their shoulder that go, you don't identify as me. You don't know my story. You don't know what's going on. How dare you say this? How dare you say that? Oh, great. Here, another man's going to open up. And trust me, I've experienced mansplaining. It is a bizarre thing to actually have somebody talking down to you or explaining something to you, even though you've been doing something in an industry as long as you have. And you just have to stand there and just go, sure, whatever. I'll let you just talk because we'll just get this over with. But we need to find a way to lower those shields, put down those walls, take the chip off our shoulder, and find a space to understand, right? So there are people who want to come in and work and be part of this and be part of the conversation, but what they're afraid of is somebody saying something wrong. They're afraid that they themselves saying something wrong to upset somebody, that somebody is going to attack them, going to be aggressive towards them. Look, I get it. We're tired and we've had it, right? I get it as well. There are days where, you know, even though I do training of frontline customer service staff within our wider industry or even authorized officers, I'll walk off of a train getting a photo taken. Somebody has said something to me. Somebody has done something. I just got done being misgendered while I'm getting a coffee. I'm going through the barrier and someone then wants to talk to me. And I'm like, just F off. I don't have the time for this right now. And then not realizing this person's like, oh, Mama Mish, how are you? Hey, I just wanted to let you know, thank you so much for the training you did. You've really left so much with me and it's really added some of the work I do. And I'm going, oh my God, I feel like such a jerk because I'm sitting here going, you know, leave me alone, bugger off. And all this person wanted to do was just have 5 minutes with me because they're excited to see me when I'm thinking they're going to want to talk to me about my card or something like that. And I don't have time for it. And I think we just need to take a moment back and just realize everybody else around us is just as vulnerable and just as insecure as we are in these moments. And we need to create better places of conversation and maybe bring everyone to the table to go, how do we make this change together? But you need to leave your things at the front door if you come in this space.
Yeah. Okay. Well said. I love this. I love where we're going. Okay. You talked about training. Let's actually talk about your day job. You know, I'm thinking, oh, well, we're over half an hour in. I really want to hear about your day job now. The reality is, Michelle, and obviously you would know this, is that like heaps of organizations don't have a diversity and inclusion manager. And I think that I've heard people question, do we need one? I'm going to just call it, right? Reality, you know, just generally, you know, in the sector, in, you know, that know so many people who work outside the transport mm-hmm. sector as well. So what do you do? You know, what's your day-to-day look like?
I love this. So the best way I always describe to people my job is my day job is my gay job. I'm so blessed to be able to go and not just focus on diversity and inclusion within the workplace, but also focusing on specifically things that help my wider community. Now, people don't often understand that LGBTIQA+ encompasses everything. So you get people with disability, whether they're visible or invisible disabilities, people of multi-faith, people of color, people of different diverse backgrounds, whether they're non-binary or whether they're male, they're female, you know, whatever. It's not just gay. So I've had people say to me, yeah, but isn't it just gay? So what does gay have to do with all the other stuff, right? So it's a very complex space with complex needs. So my role is a senior advisor for diversity and inclusion within the Department of Transport and Planning, focusing on LGBTIQA+ programs throughout, not just the department, but within the industry, but also collaborating with the wider Victorian Public Service. So back in 2022, there was a 10-year strategy released by the wider or whole of Victorian government called Pride in Our Future. So from 2022 to 2032. And what this was a collaboration between from the wider community. So we're talking about, you know, lesbian spaces, gay spaces, health spaces, mental health spaces, employment, et cetera. And within the Department of Fairness, Family and Housing, they have a department called the Equality Branch. And they have an implementation plan that reaches out to all the different departments of the whole Victorian government. And there are actions within that implementation plan that we are all tasked with. Now, one task that we have within ours is increasing employment within transport and infrastructure within Victoria. And there are many other things within there that we put together. So we put an action plan together within the Department of Transport and Planning that aligns with that 10-year strategy. Now, it's one thing delivering within the departments. You know, I can create a gender affirmation guide and create little one fact pages. I can do all the things I need to do around training. But I often found that a lot of the stuff we did when it came to trying to connect further within the wider industry with our operators, with our agencies, within, you know, all the different areas of transport, there was always these barriers of communication or even what projects were happening. So I took a different approach and I flipped it. And you know, the very first line of my action plan is sustainable best practice within the department, industry, and VPS. So going and connecting with the Equality Branch and talking with them about the implementation plan and understanding all the actions they have in there and how it aligns to our action plan. And then going out to, say, Beeline and Yarra and Metro and Kinetic and, you know, VicTrack and LXRP and SRLA and, you know, Westgate Tunnel projects, all of these, and understanding some of the actions they have. But what I found was they didn't have everything they necessarily needed to do, the delivery of what they needed to do. So, you know, they're looking to train the frontline staff. They're looking to do, you know, someone who's affirming their gender in the workplace. And so they didn't have what they needed to do that work. So I started working with them, and as part of the action plan, we developed what's called the Bent Transport Initiative. And so, yes, it doesn't have planning in the title, but the whole point is it's about focusing more on that front line, what people can see out on the ground. Because unfortunately, when you're dealing with consumers, if they see public transport, they see a train, a bus, a tram as pretty much the same thing as public transport. They're not aware of the complexities that happen within government and who owns what property and who's the subcontractor and all that kind of stuff. So what I do is I go and connect with D&I leads, health and well-being leads, heads of pride networks, or even ERGs of other areas. And I sit down and I share with them what the focus is of where we're going on for the year to come, but also taking different days of significance, like say, for example, Ida Hobbit, which is the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Intersex Discrimination, and Transphobia, big acronym. Instead of focusing on just say one small piece and doing just cupcakes and a banner and a flag, we now come together as an industry to say, do something that we can either connect with commuters or how do we do deliver something or announce something, something that we can be an industry-wide, say, event. But also looking at events like, say, Wear Purple Day. Most people don't even know what Wear Purple Day is. Now, Wear Purple Day is around young LGBTIQA plus people and talking about discrimination and mental health. But I had to take a moment back and put myself in a leadership strategy sort of space. And I go, why would I would focus on, say, youth? Of course, we need to focus on youth. Youth is important. But why LGBT youth specifically here in the workplace? What does it have to do to relate to us? Now, anyone who works in transport knows that we have a need for the best talent. We need to have diverse talent. We need to grow our workforce as well in this space. And when it comes to young people, we need to show them and see us as an industry of choice for their future, especially young women when it comes to STEM. But a lot of young LGBTIQA plus people say that they won't ever have a job because they're LGBT, right? They'll say, I'm trans, I'll never have a job, I'll never have a job, I'll never be, because unfortunately, they can't see the people like themselves working within this industry that we're trying to make an industry of choice. So they go, well, I don't see someone who's like me. I don't see a trans person. I don't see a bi person. I don't see a person of color. I don't see a person in a wheelchair. Why would I go there? Who says it's inclusive, right? Well, all we hear is the negative stories that might come through around someone's experience on a tram line or one of the bad things that might happen. But the bad things will overshadow maybe 20 positive things that happened in the workplace. So what I did was said, let's rewire it. Let's flip it on its head. Let's do something different. So we made it an industry day. The first one we did was at Yarra Trams. I said, all right, I want to host a group of kids from a organization called Hester Hornbrook Academy. We're disengaged. I want to bring them in and I want them to meet queer people who work within the wider industry, right? And I want them to see that it is actually an inclusive space. It is a safer place than they realize. I do realize we have a long way to go, but it is safer than we realize. Instead of us eating a cupcake, we get to do a barbecue and feed them for a day. And I'm sure some of these kids probably didn't eat breakfast that day or probably wouldn't have had lunch for that day. They get to tour the facilities. They got to actually go in a workshop. None of them have probably even touched tools before. We had these kids putting mud flaps on trams. They get to ride the simulator. They get to ask questions. And by the time they were done, some of these kids wanted to be drivers and customer service staff and work within the industry. So it was a way of changing how we do this and how we collaborate as an industry to show all of the, how big the industry is and how many options and available career paths there actually are. But what this does, it also then lifts up some of the smaller conversations we need. So how often we talk about bisexuality or intersex variations or trans people or non-binary people in the workplace. It's taking the load off of those groups and rethinking it. We did an amazing interaction with Midsummer Carnival. Midsummer Carnival is a space in Alexandra Gardens where over 200,000 people from across Victoria will come into this space to engage with businesses and stalls and with each other to start the midsummer period. And we came together for the first time as an industry, working together, connecting with people. And we had such an amazing interaction. We brought in a second drag artist through V-Line, the first one's through Yarra. And people just gravitated to them. They wanted to talk to them. They felt, and we have this beautiful rainbow bench that we had commissioned and created. And people wanted to take their photos on it. And they felt seen. And the comments we kept hearing were, oh my God, I didn't realize transport was so safe, so inclusive. We didn't know all this actually happened. And it's at building that relationship with a community that doesn't necessarily feel safe traveling on our network. And we just recently commissioned and finished getting the first ever survey done for the industry to understand the LGBTIQA plus's community's relationship to public transport. We're the second only by a month to London who did the exact same survey, ironically at the same time, which ended up actually with myself and the researchers speaking to people at London at night, trying to understand some of their stats and how much they actually related to stuff happening here. Because without the data, we're never going to be able to run certain programs. It's looking at gender affirmation resources and how we then take that, develop it here, send it out into the industry, let them try it out, let them use it, deliver it to their people. Because if I were to go and work at, say, Yarra and then move to V-Line or come up to the department or go to Level Crossings, I want to know that the policies and the way things are done are going to be similar across all of the different areas of the industry itself. So unifying that, standardizing it. And then once they're done and actually trialing it with their own people who are coming out, they can come back and give me the feedback. And then I can then go and redevelop it here within DTP and make sure that then I'm listening to what they're doing, what they need, how they need it delivered. And then I can make it stronger and more robust here within DTP. And that gives you just an example of how the work I'm doing, collaborating with industry, trialing things out there, then delivering further back into here the tools that the industry actually are looking for instead of us actually dictating to them what we think they need.
Wow. I've just loved hearing the initiatives you've worked on. It's so powerful, the impact that you're making. And hey, I just want to say thank you for calling out, you know, the trend of the traditional morning tea with cupcakes, right? Because actually I feel like it's the go-to. Okay, so Michelle, I want to talk about the communities we serve, right? So you referenced this, the communities. There's a couple of parts I want to ask about. So I heard you say gender equity. I'm just going to say it. I feel like there's so many conversations that I'm a part of that I hear, and it's like, what's gender equity versus gender equality, and what should we be talking about? Maybe could we just start there? And then I'm going to talk about what we could be doing on our networks.
Sure. So, you know, equality means, you know, each individual group of people is given the same resources or opportunities. Okay. And that's talking about equality. But equity recognizes that each person has different circumstances and allocates the exact resources and opportunities need to reach an equal outcome. So sometimes people might need a little bit more to get there. So there might be people of different backgrounds with different languages that might say have barriers to, you know, filling out, say, applications. Okay. And, you know, we want to go and do equality, which means everyone is treated the exact same way, but we need to create gender equity spaces. Okay. Because not everyone is provided with what they need to actually succeed. So, you know, just because we go and create these spaces, it may not be accessible. So someone like me as a trans woman, you know, I also have barriers when it comes to, say, think about hospitals, for example, in areas of emergency. You know, patients are prioritized based on their health condition, right? All right. Therefore, treatment is based on the severity of the condition rather than the order of arrival. Where with equality, we're doing that based on order of arrival. So, and this is not just when it comes down to, say, trans women, but just talking about women with disability, women of color, multi-faith, multi-language, all that sort of stuff, okay? But even women who are cisgender, heteronormative, and maybe in heterosexual presenting relationships or heterosexual, there are still barriers and challenges in some of those based on where they come from, whether it's regional or metro or whatever. So we need to talk about how we create those equity spaces. Yeah, it takes more resources to create an equity space, but that's what we strive for. And for me, I may have come being someone who has lived a heteronormative life as a man before coming out, the things that I've had have been lost. And so in order to go and have what I need in life to be in the same room as some of these spaces, there are times where I've had to have the conversation around equity and a little bit of support to get there.
Awesome. All right. So we're going to talk about gender equity on the network. This is a public transport podcast. So let's talk about public transport specifically.
Of course.
I mean, I was going to ask you a question around, you know, if you were going to design a network from scratch, you know, what would you do? Endless bucket of money. I'm actually not going to ask that, right? So, you know, we have listeners that are around the world. You know, it always blows my mind. It's not just Australia, it's New Zealand, it's the US, it's UK, it's Canada, it's France. You know, it's incredible the kind of span of the podcast. And interestingly as well, a quarter of the listeners are male, right? So, I mean, I don't know, like I look at the Spotify analytics, right? I don't actually know if it gives people the opportunity to identify other than cis male or cis female, but I'm just thinking, right? So we've got people who are working in government agencies, in operators, manufacturers of vehicles, like you name it, it kind of keeps going on. So let's just think, if you're working in an organization, if you're an individual working in this public transport sector, what is one thing or, you know, maybe a top kind of initiative that you think that we could be doing in the sector to improve gender equity on our network?
Let's call out the common things, right? We need to look at security. We need to look at cameras. We need to look at lighting. You know, these are some generic things that just need to be done in general, because those are some of the barriers that a lot of women in general face when it comes to just the safety out in our networks, you know, losing their access to, say, part-times. A lot of women are looking for part-time roles and work with it, because women usually take the brunt of the caring within the households, whether it's someone who's elder or a family member or a child. Those are things we know this. This, I don't need to explain any further on that. But I think that the one that is probably the biggest has to do around toilets. I don't want somebody rolling their eyes going, yes, a trans woman's talking about toilets on a podcast. Here we go, toilets again. But it's more than just, say, trans women. Even if you had gendered male and female toilets still out in a wider network, there's still a lot of issues around this that create even just safety and sanitary purposes. Now, one of the things I have started really exploring around this is, we'll talk about stuff around this. We'll talk with our local councils. We'll talk about our people doing planning. There's all these different barriers around, oh, we can only have one toilet. We can only have the two, but they're male and female. Really, they're the exact same room. So really, in a lot of ways, we should have them as just gender neutral in general, because what if one's already taken and it's a woman in a woman's toilet and the other one's empty? We should allow the woman to use the other toilet, right? But we also should be exploring outside our own industry to other blue collar areas. Maybe it's within the postal service. Maybe it's within utility services around, you know, what kind of issues they're doing with depots. Now, there's two conversations around toilets. So those of us within the white collar corporate half of this industry, it's easier. I mean, there's challenges around, say, building management, because usually buildings are owned by other organizations and they kind of do their own thing, and they'll basically use, say, policies and standards and, you know, things around them. There should be only, say, be a certain number of toilets per 100 people within the certain area. And that way they can get away from, you know, not having to provide and do any further structural changes to change toilets. Now, we just got done doing some refreshes in certain buildings within government. And, you know, in that time, we should have talked about how do we create gender neutral toilets for some of our staff. And unfortunately, that's not a conversation that was even brought up. But really, in other ways, in white collar areas, it's a lot easier and it's a lot less messy. The problems we face are going to be down in the front line, the blue collar, the actual workforce out doing the work itself, right? And we're also looking at an industry, not just transport, but also, you know, again, your postals, utilities, whatever, that have been shaped by men for over a century. And we got men who work in this, say, these industries who have been in there 40, 50, 60 years, you know, the Kevos, the Shannons, the Micks, who, you know, just want to do their job, go home, and don't give a crap if someone new with diverse is coming in. They just want you to do your job. There's colorful language I can put around this because I know how they actually speak, but I think that's also where we need to have a take a step back and go and realize how these people actually speak and what their mentality is while they're out there. And a lot of times we haven't really spoken to them, but we'll come in there and tell them how they should be acting and how they should be working in the workplace. And most of them will kind of give you the two fingers up and go, yeah, on ya. Right. And so, unfortunately, their way of pushing back is usually defecating on walls and urinating on floors. And, you know, we have to work through, you know, how do we navigate their feelings that they're expressing to us in their own way around the changes we're trying to change to make it more equitable for other parts of our society? Because, again, we should be having a workforce that reflects the people who we are looking after in this space. So we need to also look outside our own industry. We need to go to these other industries and see some of the challenges they might be having as well. And, you know, having maybe even if we had some kind of summit, we spoke about some of the challenges around this and, you know, how we're able to go and add a third toilet or better facilities or, you know, exploring the idea of all gender facilities out in these areas. But again, you know, because of the demographics we have out there, say a majority of men out there, again, when I've described how some people are acting in some of the toilets, it makes it a more unsanitary and safe place for women in general to use toilets and facilities. And so no one wants to be out there in the middle of the dark and going into a toilet that's actually really disgusting and door handles broken and locks barely locking. And then, you know, let's talk about, you know, cameras and lighting and stuff that need to be added on top of that. But the toilets themselves should be a safe and clean place for most people to come to work to.
Yeah, I actually so appreciate you talking about toilets, right? Which might seem in some ways simple or, you know, it's like, to be honest, like, I'm sorry to hear that, you know, the conversations, you know, that we still don't bring up toilets in these conversations, right? Because I just think so many workplaces have a meditation room, a prayer room. We're trying to be inclusive and you know, but there's still stuff that's being missed, which is really important, right? So I appreciate you bringing that up. I'm conscious that this podcast is probably one of the longest I've done, and I could honestly keep going for an hour with you. There's so much I want to talk about, but I'm just going to ask two more questions. I want to ask about leadership, and I want to ask for your advice for younger people entering or in our industry. Okay, so if we talk about leadership, you know, there's these kind of traditional skills around leadership. There's practices that we undertake. How would you describe your leadership style? You know, what are the practices that underpin that?
Oh, it's funny. Like I come from such a Gen X background, Midwest sort of old fashioned mindset that I always appreciate people who show initiative. I don't expect someone to run out and go get me a coffee or do those sorts of things and just be there to snap, but also someone who understands that stuff they're doing is a little complex. Just people who show initiative. I like to really hear some of the things people are going into that they're maybe struggling with and being open with me. I don't want people just showing up and telling me everything's okay if it's not. I really want to look after the people that I'm with, because I feel that if you invest in people and look after them, they'll actually do a lot more for you and for the work that they're doing. But also making sure that they also feel like they're heard, that I go to them and go, well, what actually do you think? This is what I've done. This is what I'm doing. And I know I'm applying the learnings and the teachings that I have here, but I'm curious to hear things from you. There's also a bit of a divide in mentality with maybe some of the older generations like myself. You know, I'm 46 now, almost 47. And, you know, we got young people coming in who are in their 20s. And so there's a big divide in attitudes and how, what we will and won't put up with. I've learned to navigate and move between spaces, depending on the people that I'm with and working with, to make sure that I'm trying to hear and also respond in the way that other people are hearing me say from someone of an older generation, right? But I'd say some of the things maybe I have to work on is probably more of a work-life balance myself. I've had to, for over 12 years, work hard to be visible, be seen, show up in the moments that I know no one else is going to be, and just take every opportunity. You know, there was an example where I was at conference and I saw the secretary leaving after speaking, because most speaking sessions or conferences, most people will come and speak and leave, but I'm somebody who will stay to stumps, right? I'm there to the end because I want to engage and connect and network as much as I can, because who knows what kind of opportunities will lie in the room. But I purposely got up when I knew they finished, they were on their last question, talking to the panel presenter. I went out and got myself a cup of tea, and I took my time making the cup of tea, and I knew they were going to come out. And so I made, oh, hey, it was lovely to chat to you. Peter, and he was like, oh, Michelle Shepherd, I know who you are. I said, oh, well, thank you, Peter. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. And we had a moment, that elevator pitch, that conversation, talking about what I'm doing. And now I have a coffee lined up with that secretary that's coming up, because I showed up. I knew it was happening. I've learned to read the room and get there. And I want to be able to go and help some of these younger generations who do come in and work with me, but there's just a different style, and I have to learn to adapt to how they're operating as well too, because I don't want to come across as toxic to some of them.
Thank you. And hey, I just love that you've set up this coffee with the secretary, right? Because it's powerful to have these conversations with the people at the top. Okay, my last question. I always finish on this question, and it's really important, I think. And I just want to acknowledge, though, you've shared so much incredible advice during this podcast for our listeners to really think about. What would be your top piece of advice for people who are early on in their career in public transport and mobility, particularly for women, gender diverse people? You know, what is it that you think that they could really take away from this conversation?
Always be curious. Leave your preconceived ideas at the door. Leave the chip at the door. I'm not saying put your guard down and put up with nonsense or, you know, toxicity, but also learn to read the room of maybe someone else's history and someone else's maturity of not being able to do the same thing as well. You know, work on your skills of pivoting. You know, that means, you know, in that moment, if you've got to shift and change how your language is in these moments, because, you know, just ticking and flicking, signing the paper, sending the email and leaving at 5. If you're passionate about making a change within a space, then it means showing up at 7 a.m. when you know that an executive is going to be at their office and you're on your laptop checking email and having a cup of coffee and making sure you're there and pivoting to have the conversation but also meeting them in the way that they know how and how they know how to speak. So it's sharpening those particular skills, because just showing up to your job at 9 a.m. and leaving at 5 in the afternoon and just sending out your emails, if you expect things to change just by doing that, it is not going to change. It's about showing up and leaving your bullshit at the door and trying to help, you know, trying to navigate somebody else's at that time. Because I tell you, that's how things get changed. And I can give you so many more examples. Like you said, we could speak for another hour of how those actions have actually shifted and changed in the areas that I'm working in already.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Great advice. You have honestly, truly inspired me, and I'm sure many of our listeners through this conversation today. I just want to say thank you for creating the brave space, for the permission to have this conversation, for sharing so honestly, for sharing your ideas on how we all can be thinking about how do we improve diversity and inclusion in our workplaces, across the transport sector, and for the people who choose and need to use our public transport networks. Michelle, it's been such an incredible honor to interview you, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It has been such a privilege to be able to have this conversation with you. And who knows, down the road, maybe we'll do another conversation and share some more things.
I would absolutely love to. I'd also love to have a coffee with you at some stage. That would be incredible.
Anytime.
Amazing. That was Michelle Shepherd, Senior Advisor of Diversity and Inclusion at the Victorian Department of Transport and Planning. I really want to thank all of our listeners for joining our podcast today, for your support in this podcast. We wouldn't be doing it without you and without the incredible audience we have. I'm Michelle Batsis, the Executive Director of Future Mobility at the Victorian Department of Transport and Planning. Thank you, and I look forward to sharing with you next time.
Thank you for listening to Women Who Move Nations, the public transport podcast. We're proud to deliver this episode in partnership with NEC Smart Transport Solutions. To find out more, visit nec.com.au. This series is produced by Jamie Leowen and Sophia Dickinson for the Public Transport Association Australia, New Zealand. To find out more, please visit our website, ptaanz.org. Tune in for more soon.